The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Hey guys, welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who have gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm bilingual, but instead of a foreign language, I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military. I've used this unique skill to help thousands of veterans, and today I want to help you navigate the hidden opportunities and unseen risks you may face during your own transition from the military. This is the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast.
I falsely was under the assumption that people saw me the way I saw me. And don't judge me, but that sounds terribly naive. But you know, when you're walking around in uniform, and I know those that are veterans in the current era, there've been eras in our history where people don't salute you for being in uniform. But when you walk in the community, people, they thank you for your service. They're proud that you're in the military. And there's this narrative that, you know, you can tackle anything and you can do anything. So I definitely had to learn to not stand on the image, right? But actually develop some speaking and talking points that relayed my value to an employer in terms that they would understand and go, oh, we don't have anybody like that in our company. That's kind of unique. We should hire this guy.
Today, I would like to welcome Keith Fort. Keith is an Air Force veteran who served 21 years. The majority of his career was spent in aircraft maintenance and maintenance leadership, but his last 8 years in the Air Force were spent in the recruiting field until he retired in 2014. When he left the Air Force, he thought he could do anything, but he focused primarily on human resources roles. The first job he landed within a month of his retirement was as an employment center supervisor in a public workforce service center. He soon moved on to do similar work for another government agency and spent some time as a project manager working for the state of Arizona to help staff the governor's workforce council. It was his advocacy for veterans in that role that put him in the spotlight for his current role working for Senator Martha McSally as her veteran outreach program coordinator, where he interacts with and assists veterans across the state of Arizona. Welcome to the show, Keith.
Well, thank you, Lori. I really appreciate you thinking of me and having me on today. And I would like to point out, thank you for going through my bio just briefly. I'm very proud that I work for Senator McSally and I help veterans all over the state. I would just like to point out as a part of this podcast that I'm here in my unofficial capacity, not representing the senator. So just kind of my personal thoughts on how my transition process went and hope that anything we talk about today could potentially help veterans as they transition from active duty to becoming a veteran. So thanks for having me on.
So if I counted correctly, as we were going through your bio, you are on your fourth job since your retirement in 2014. So how did you make the decision it was time to make a change in your career for each move that you made post-military?
Yeah, so I started when I retired in 2014, and my transition journey probably wasn't as good as it could have been, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that today. And, you know, I did land a job during my transition before my terminal leave, before, I, you know, I was no longer receiving pay or benefits from the Air Force. But I don't think that I really landed in my first role post Air Force in something that I would say was a career. I found a job and I really don't think I was a good cultural fit for my first couple companies, even though I will say I excelled at each one of those jobs. And I know you mentioned I'm on my fourth job, and you know, each job that I've had in the last 6 years, it's been a promotion. So I wasn't necessarily hopping around from place to place looking, you know, for a better fit. I was a professional at all those jobs and excelled at them, even though they might not have been the best for me, and I promoted through, so.
I think, you know, just seeing it as building blocks almost, right? Yeah. So each one was a stepping stone for the next role. And the one thing I always talk to veterans about is that once you're out of the military, you have to be your own career manager. You have to do what's best for you and always be on the lookout for your growth in your own career. There's really not anyone necessarily looking out for you like there may have been in the military, right?
Yeah, you make a great point, because after 20 years in the Air Force, there was a definitive career path laid out for you. Yes. That was attainable if you chose to attain it. If you wanted to kind of, you know, if you wanted to promote and grow in your career, they laid it out for you exactly how to do it. But now in the civilian workforce, there's a little bit more that's unwritten, I would say, and you have to educate yourself and be your own best advocate, learn what career path you want. I definitely learned from my transition and landing in my first job or two. I learned more about what I didn't necessarily like about the civilian workforce than what I did like, but that was a good learning experience too. I know for me, I often am a learner in the, when things have a negative impact on me, I often learn the most from those experiences. And that's what kind of pushed me forward to where I am now.
And you mentioned cultural fit earlier, and, you know, people talk about that. Oh, it's not a good cultural fit. And I'm sure there's a veteran out there or a service member preparing to transition, and they go, what do they mean a cultural fit? I go to work, I get my paycheck, I go home, right? So let's explore that a little bit. Tell me, what does that mean for you?
Yeah. And it's evolved. I think I have a pretty good understanding. They might've been words for me in the beginning, but now that I've lived it for a little while, I would definitely say, and I can say for anyone who's been in the military, think about cultural fit as everything that you fall back on. You may have five or six different jobs, whatever branch of service you were in. And those are the jobs that you perform, but the actual culture that you perform those jobs in are the people that you worked with, the rules and expectations, how you wear the uniform, all the guidance and the way of life. So when you walked in your door to go to work every day, there were a set of cultural expectations on you. And whether you like them or not, I happen to like them. I'm a structure and order and discipline kind of person. That is something that is hard to identify when you transfer over into the civilian workforce, because in the military, for me, it was very overt. You knew what the culture was and you knew where your boundaries were, and what was acceptable and what wasn't acceptable. And I had a difficult time. I don't know if I should say difficult. I don't want people to think that I'm out here struggling. I'm doing well, but it was definitely a learning experience for me to understand when you walked into a company and you're evaluating that company potentially on, for me, 20 years of service in the Air Force, the goals and values of the company that I now was working for did not line up very well with what I had experienced and come to know and love in the Air Force. So when you think about cultural fit, you go to your job every day in a civilian workforce, but how do they treat their employees? How do they treat career development that you spoke to earlier? How do they deal with discipline? What do they do if you are a hard charger? Are they scared of you? Are they do they want to promote you, or do they want to keep you at bay? Those are some examples I can give of culture, and you really do have to figure out and do some research what culture fits for you.
You know, I think that's such a good point, because I often tell people, and if you're in an interview, you're there to interview them as much as they're interviewing you, right? Yeah. And you will find yourself in an interview, and you may have had this experience where you say, I don't think I want to work here. I don't think this is right for me, right? And so I believe you have to have the confidence to say something better will come along. Something that works better for me will come along.
Yeah, and you just made me think of something that I've talked to a lot of veterans about. When you are being interviewed, but you are interviewing them for sure to make sure that you're going to be happy there and it's not just a paycheck. And I would really recommend, interviewing skills is probably a whole nother issue we could talk about separately, but I would just like to make the point that it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to ask them what they think and how their leadership style is. I've made a habit of every interview I've been in asking the person interviewing me, what's your leadership style and how do you handle a certain set of situations? And they've really appreciated that I've asked that, and it's given me some insight to maybe put them back in the having to answer a question seat and just see how they respond. So it's a way that I like to find out about the culture.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you should go to every interview with questions. And I think, yes, I really like that one. What's your leadership style like? Yes. And, you know, just trying to get that insight.
And you can tell right away if they have a leadership style or if they've thought about it before based upon their answer. And that gives you some insight into the culture, right? Mm-hmm. So
That's a very good point. I really like that. So thank you. That's good insight. Mm-hmm. If you think about your transition, you know, there are things we expect and things we don't. So I want to know, what caught you by surprise in your transition?
Yeah, I don't know about what caught me by surprise. I really think that I thought I was going to do a better job of explaining my military experience. And for those listening, that means not talking of using the word aircraft and from a maintenance professional, right? And using all these keywords that if you were talking to your friends or you were at a promotion board in the military, you know, I always used to say I would excel at a promotion board really easily in the Air Force, but my early interviewing skills when I transitioned, I wasn't selling myself very well. I just didn't do a very good job at it. It's kind of interesting to go from 20 years or even 4 years of kind of being indoctrinated to speak a certain way, and everyone speaks the same way as you do and understands what you're saying, and then have to go flip that 180 degrees and explain to an employer why what you did on an airplane is important. And I can do the same. I can apply the skills I learned doing working in aircraft maintenance to problem solving, leadership, and those kind of things. That was the biggest surprise for me. I think I'm a good communicator, but I found myself struggling to really translate those skills.
Okay. And I think you made a really good point there where you said, I can do this and here's how it relates to you. I think that's important, not just saying this is what I can do, but also relating it to the employer. And did that take you some time to learn?
It did. And it took me some time to figure out that employers really do want to hire veterans. I know it to be true. There may be some smoke and mirrors out there, but for the most part, employers are looking for highly qualified veterans. But what I've discovered is they're not going to hire 50 veterans in a vacuum. They'll hire you as a veteran if you make sense to them. You've translated your skills properly and they see you as no longer a military member, but a military member veteran with that experience that you can apply into your new job. So it's about, you have to sell yourself properly.
Yeah, I think let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about translation, translating your skills from the military. I mean, you're not doing anything with aircraft now, right? So you're not working on aircraft. You're not leading aircraft maintainers.
No.
And you've had a lot of success, obviously, in your post-military career. You've had some great positions on your resume, if you will. So how did you learn to do that? Because you said you struggled with it a bit in the beginning.
Yeah, I did in the beginning because I falsely was under the assumption that people saw me the way I saw me. And don't judge me, but that sounds terribly naive. But you know, when you're walking around in uniform, and I know those that are veterans in the current era, there've been eras in our history where people don't salute you for being in uniform. But when you walk in the community, people, they thank you for your service. They're proud that you're in the military. And there's this narrative that, you know, you can tackle anything and you can do anything. So I definitely had to learn to not stand on the image, right? But actually develop some speaking and talking points that relayed my value to an employer in terms that they would understand and go, oh, we don't have anybody like that in our company. That's kind of unique. We should hire this guy. So it did take some learning to do it. Took some deliberate thought process to look at military records and say, how can I speak about this differently?
So give me maybe an example, if you could think of one, and put you on the spot here, of maybe a skill that you had and how you changed that around or translated it to, you know, to success in an interview or on your resume.
Yeah, and examples probably when I was, and I talk a lot of folks that I've, veterans that I've helped with resumes and the transition are folks that are in the 4 and 6 year range, right? And maybe they didn't do 20 years and they didn't gain the supervisory experience and those kind of roles or the breadth of experience that I did. But let's say you were working on an aircraft in the Air Force and you did it for 4 years. And a lot of folks I'll see put on their resume might say something along the lines of, you know, how they troubleshot and repaired this intricate electrical system on an F-15, which was my airplane that I worked on originally, one of the best airplanes in the world. I'm not biased.
I don't know. I think I heard an F-35 going over your house just now.
It's pretty loud here. I apologize if you get the sound of freedom.
You and I don't live very far away from each other, so I'm sure I'll hear it too. So
no problem. So folks would talk about, you know, in the military terms, they troubleshot and repaired these electrical systems. And, you know, if you're going to go apply for a job with a financial institution or an insurance company and you put that bullet on your resume, I'll tell you what, as if I'm a recruiter for the insurance company, I get it right away. But the vast majority of the recruiters in these companies are not veterans and they don't know what you did and they don't understand, although they might suspect that piece of information you put on your resume is important. They don't really understand it. So what I've taught people to do and what I've done on my resume is let's peel that troubleshooting and repairing part into how do you approach a problem? And you can just back that up and apply it to whatever company you're applying for. Look at what kind of problems they have as an industry. How do you approach a problem? How do you apply problem solving methods to it? What kind of leadership did you use if you had to lead anybody? And there's almost always in the Air Force, you have to include other agencies to solve these kind of problems. So you can talk about the teamwork and inclusion that you used. And you build your resume bullets around that kind of structure versus using the military jargon about the airplane and the, you know, you talk about problem solving, leadership, and your approach. And you instantly become a veteran who has problem solving skills versus a veteran who fixed a wiring problem. Approached it.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, you think about, you know, I'm a electronics technician. Mm-hmm. And I, instead of talking about that system, like you said, I took a systematic analytical approach to defining the root cause of problems and brought together cross-functional project teams or, you know, coordinated with interagency, you know, project teams to resolve customer issues in a timely manner. I mean, it's just completely changes the language. I think you're absolutely right there. Yep.
And I would also say that, you know, I'm coming from an Air Force perspective, but I've helped hundreds of veterans with resumes. And I think you read in my beginning, I was in the workforce system helping veterans, you know, obtain jobs. And this applies, the most common one that I would get is if you were in the Army or the Marine Corps, maybe your job was around munitions or you were on the front lines. And those same, and I would argue with them because that you're a little narrow-minded sometimes when you are transitioning and you only know that experience and you don't understand the civilian world yet, that you can apply those same things that we just talked about, whether you worked on the front lines in the Army or you were in the Marine Corps or you were on an aircraft carrier in the Navy or you're in the Coast Guard. It's the same idea for a civilian company, and those are the things that they're looking for. So I just implore folks, take the military out of it a little bit, be proud of it, but demilitarize. And that's that piece that I think I said in the beginning that I had a hard time with, which is why I'm talking about it so much, I think, because it's really important and a lot of people struggle with it.
Yeah, you know, you think about someone on the front lines in the Army, the Marine Corps, who is like, I just shot a gun. I just was, you know, on my team in combat. And, you know, if you say that on your resume, of course, no one's going to see the value of it. But could you say that you remain calm under pressure? You made split second decisions in high stress environments. You worked with a very close knit team and built communication. I mean, there are all sorts of things that come out of that experience, and you're absolutely right. So I think it's just, we just have to see it differently.
You have to see it differently. And if you don't know how to write it, like you just said, or like how I just said, there are tons of resources available for veterans to help you do these kind of things. It's not all on the veteran to figure out how to speak civilian when they don't know how to speak civilian. So if you're a veteran sitting at home going, oh, that sounds great, but I don't know how to do that, there, please reach out to folks. There's a lot of resources out there to help you think about it differently.
Are there any in particular that you would recommend?
There's a lot of local, just like in the Maricopa County area. Of course, you have the public workforce system, Arizona at Work. They have a segment of their workforce system that specifically work with veterans, and the people that are helping with the resumes are veterans themselves. And they also connect with employers to help bridge that gap between a person looking for a job and the employer. There's a lot of other organizations around, like Career Connectors, that I've had a lot of success with. And if you simply Google something like veteran workforce assistance, you're going to find that there's a lot of people in the community that love veterans and want to help them. So
I would also throw out ONET. ONET has a crosswalk tool where you can put in your military occupation code, your MOS, and it'll give you kind of a translation of that. ACINET, which I'll link all of these in the show notes, but they all have some good translation tools, and just use that as a foundation, right? It's not like the one and only thing you can ever do, but it's a good start to start learning how to translate your skills. So, when you kind of look back on your transition and you were preparing for that process, like what was your biggest fear?
A lot of people will tell you that their biggest fear was, you know, the fear of the unknown, the interviewing process, the what am I going to do? And I really wasn't nervous about any of that. We had made a family decision that after 20 years, we liked where we were at. I'm from the East Coast originally, but we had decided we wanted to stay in Phoenix and we were going to be here. So I was at peace with that decision. My biggest fear was literally leaving the Air Force behind, because I did it for 20 years and I actually really enjoyed it. Some days I really, really miss it. Some days I don't. But my biggest fear walking out was I wasn't going to be able to find that sense of duty, and that the Air Force, and it became more apparent as I transitioned out, the Air Force was such a big part of my life. And it drove my sense of purpose. I felt like I was doing something important with my life. And I was really worried about, I guess it goes back to cultural too, a little bit. What was I going to do next? How was I going to be happy? I probably was a little bit too overconfident that I was going to find a job, which we could talk about that piece. I really think my biggest fear was leaving the Air Force behind. Which may be out of character for some people, but.
I think when you serve like half your life or sometimes more than half of your life, and it becomes a part of your identity. And I think there's nothing wrong with having that as part of your identity, but it's not who you are, right? That's what you have to figure out, is take some time and figure out, like, who am I? What's important to me? Yep. What are my values? How do I want to use the skills I've gained next, right?
Yeah.
And it will never be the same. right? Your job now is not the same as when you were in the Air Force, but that doesn't mean it has to be bad, right? Different doesn't have to be bad. So just, you know, those are some things you need to prepare yourself for, because it will be different.
It will be different, and probably my fears were realized, because my first couple jobs post-military were lived up to my fear. I spent so much time missing the Air Force and trying to learn my new role. I walked out of the Air Force and walked into a job where I was supervising 11 or 12 people and an entire employment center, and nothing was the same. Nothing. And there was a combination of, you have to learn a new job, and I really missed the culture of the Air Force. So it's a tough time. And I hear a lot of people talk about how difficult that part is, leaving your brothers and sisters in arms behind and walking out into this new world where people know nothing of your accomplishments or what you went through. So it can be tough, for sure.
How do you navigate that? So how do you kind of balance that missing the Air Force and building a new culture and kind of integrating into your new role?
Yeah, luckily for me, I knew that I wanted to be involved with veterans. And that, to me, that would be my connection kind of back to the Air Force a little bit. So as I was in the workforce roles that I was in, I spent a lot of time working with veterans, connecting with Luke Air Force Base, making sure they were aware of services for veterans that were transitioning, and just trying to stay connected to that feeling of service. I mean, my whole life has been service. I joined the Air Force when I was 19, a little bit older than that now. But every job I've had has been in service in some way. And I wanted to make sure that I still kept that piece of me, because like you said, that's part of who I am. So
I think that's important to figure that out. I think that's great that you've taken the time to do that. So what would you say has been your biggest challenge? So as you kind of navigated that transition, you know, what was most challenging for you?
Yeah. And I think probably goes back to what I was talking about earlier about the skills translation. Mm-hmm. And a lot of veterans that I've talked to, this is the biggest issue for them. And part of the problem is some folks, and myself included, maybe don't realize you're not doing a very good job of it until too long. You know, it's it was really challenging to translate my military speak into civilian terms. What moved that forward so quickly for me was getting my first job. I got my first job while I was still on my terminal vacation, whatever you want to call it, my terminal leave. I hate that we call it terminal leave. It sounds like you're going to die or something, but the military calls it terminal leave. So I was on my final days of paid, and I picked up a new job, and that was what literally opened my eyes to, I had been doing it okay, but it opened my eyes to just how much better I could have done it. So that I really think that was the most challenging.
I remember you telling me that you were really good at writing EPRs, but you were really bad at writing a resume. We talked about that. Yeah. So
I really was. It's a learned skill. Just like writing an EPR or performance report is a learned skill. You really have to spend the time on the resume to learn that skill. And you have an added barrier when you're a veteran of your last 4, 6, 20, however many years it's been, have been in a language that the civilian community does not understand. So for sure.
Good. So, you know, and I think the resume, so full disclosure, Keith was in my TAP class back when I taught TAP. And I probably spent far more time on the resume than most TAP classes get. And, you know, I taught an in-depth, you know, probably 4 hours at least, if not more, on the resume. Right. What made it so difficult? What would you say was your biggest struggle with the resume?
I think, and I don't know if I knew this then, but I know it now, is just how poorly I understood the civilian workforce. As much as I was an expert in the Air Force and the jobs that I had done and the culture and all of that in the Air Force, it is hard to translate things to civilian terms when you are a newbie to civilian terms. I mean, I joined the Air Force when I was 19. That's the only language truly in my adult life that I really knew was the military. And when you don't, someone can tell you, you have to translate your skills. But if you don't really know what the civilian world's looking for, it can be hard to translate that. And that was real, that was hard for me.
Okay. I think it, you know, trying to learn that in a 5-day TAP class is probably not realistic. So I definitely would say start sooner, right? So start, you know, further back in the process, you know, don't wait till you go through TAP and, you know, you're a couple months out.
And it's embarrassing to say, but I'll say it for the benefit of anyone who's listening. I was running a recruiting flight all over the North Phoenix and the whole north part of the state while I was in TAP class. And, you know, the Air Force was really important to me and over the 20 years. And some people will say, well, you should have given TAP class the attention it deserved. And I guess in my mind, in my situational awareness, I thought I did. But we're looking back at my transition in hindsight now. So, you know, I always think that I probably could have given it more attention. I could have, you taught some amazing things in the TAP class that I certainly understood and comprehended, but applying them is a whole nother story, which is why I mentioned some of those services that are out there. But yeah, I definitely need to start early. I mean, I would recommend starting your transition a year or more out from when you think you're going to be looking for a job. Fail early while you still have a job in the military and build your network. You know, for me, I was staying in Phoenix, so I was, you know, able to build a network here. I know some people go back to their home state, but it's never too early to start.
I talked to someone the other day who started planning his transition 4 years after he entered the military, and he always planned to retire. Wow. So he'd been, you know, 17, 18 years, I believe. So maybe that's, you know, the extreme. I think it's great, I personally, but I think, you know, definitely sooner than when hit the button and say, I'm retiring or I'm separating or transitioning, right?
So. Yeah, and I would love to recommend to people to apply for jobs while you're, you know, in that year out, apply for a job and go for an informational interview. You don't necessarily have to divulge that you're not going to accept a job offer if you get it, but why not go learn more about the company? And if they're going to interview 20 people for the job, why not be one of those interviews? I know from my experience, you can learn far more from sitting through an interview and then kind of rolling back, okay, what did I do well and what didn't I do well? And you can apply that down the road as the stakes are much higher.
You know, people always say it's easier to get a job when you don't need a job, right? Totally when you have true. One. So totally that is very true.
Yep.
It takes the pressure off, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Okay.
So if we think about kind of the before, the during, and the after phase of your transition. So we kind of already talked about your before, right? You said, you know, you should have paid more attention. I think you admitted that you didn't listen to me in TAP. I think that's, but
I don't remember. Wait, are we recording this? I don't remember.
But you know, I think that's the thing is you're busy. You had a lot of responsibilities, right? So I think, you know, as you said, like you needed to take that time for yourself and you needed to focus on, you know, what was being said. What advice would you give to someone who was just as busy, if not busier than you were, running a recruiting station? What advice would you give to them?
If I could go back and do it again. You know, I'm so grateful for what the Air Force gave me, for what it taught me, for the talented people I serve with. And I say that to kind of say what I already said, which is how important the Air Force was to me, right? I appreciate that. But looking back at it, if I could do something differently, I would have given more time for me, because I'm the most important person in my life. The Air Force needed me at the time, but I should have given myself more time and attention to properly pay attention in the beginning. I would have gone to recruiting events. I would have applied for jobs way early and attempted to get an interview. If I would have done that, I would have realized that my resume was terrible. And that's why, you know, the resume gets you an interview. The interview yep. gets you the job.
Right.
So if you're not getting any interviews, you need to really take a look at your resume or have someone like Lori look at it for you. She's amazing at that. But I would have done a lot of those practice things before it got down to crunch time. You can't underestimate the power of networking. Mm-hmm. You could make the argument that networking is what allowed me to be in my current role right now. I met a lot of really good people and made some really good connections in the course of the jobs I had, whether I enjoyed them or not. I built this network that I could have built before I ever started the world of work. Maybe not the same exact people, but I could have had a bigger baseline network. So those kind of foundational things, I think I would have done, because if you are the person who is sitting at your computer at home and you're applying for 30 jobs a day using the same resume and you're not getting any interviews and you don't have a network of people, you're doing it 100% wrong. It's not about, you know, splattering the same resume out there for everyone to see. It's about customizing your translated resume from military to civilian terms and targeting it based on the keywords of the job posting. And I think I did a good job of that, but I don't have the foundational pieces that I spoke about, the interviewing experience and the networking that really probably would have helped. And I just needed to not be so hyper-focused on the Air Force.
Yep. And I think it's hard to let that go when it is such a big part of yep. your life, your identity. But it is time when you decide it's time to go, it's time then to focus on yourself.
It is.
And your needs and your family. Yep. And, you know, they got along before you got there.
That's right.
They will get along after you leave.
Yeah,
I promise. It may not be the same for them either, but they will get along. So
agreed.
Yep. Okay,
totally.
How about after your transition? You've had a lot of great success. You've got a great role now. What do you attribute your success after the transition to?
I think after the transition, and once I was in the civilian work world, it was those same things that helped me to excel while I was in the Air Force. It was an extreme level of hard work. It was really good communication skills. It was being a team player. It's all those things that people want to hire veterans for, right? Those things helped me. I was just a professional. And I found in my first couple jobs that I walked into these jobs and people were like, wow, you're kind of different. I said, yeah, I don't know if that's good or bad yet, but I'm bringing you a skill set that you may not, a different way of doing things that you may not have seen before. And they worked for me in the past. Of course, you know, I had to adapt to jobs that I have. But I think along those lines and the looking back at it, I think I should have probably realized a lot sooner that employers don't see you the way you see you. And that goes right back to, we keep talking about the same thing. It's the transition. It's the translation piece of how you're talking about yourself and whether you're talking about that aircraft that you repaired, or you're talking about the problem solving and leadership skills that you used to fix the problem. And those are some of my biggest lessons learned. And finally, I'll say that that there are so many people out there that will help veterans. You do not have to do this by yourself. In the Air Force, you spent 8 weeks going through basic training, learning how to be an airman, right? And then I spent another 10 months in technical school learning how to be a radar technician on F-15s. I mean, that was a year of my life just to get in the Air Force baseline, hadn't even turned a wrench in on a real airplane yet. That was a year. You can't expect to do this transition in a couple of weeks without putting the effort and the work in, just like you did to get into the Air Force.
I think that is the best advice anybody could get out there, is it takes much more than a 5-day class to prepare for your transition. So give it the same time, patience, and attention that you gave to becoming a successful military service member, right?
That's it.
All right. I don't think we can say any better lesson learned than that. So, well, Keith, I really appreciate your input today. For maybe, you know, looking back and giving us your hindsight of things you would have done differently. You know, I appreciate you being honest about maybe not necessarily listening to everything I said at TAF. No. I said a lot. I always likened it to drinking from a fire hose. So I had that fire hose wide open when I taught TAP. So it is a lot of information. So thank you for being here today. I really appreciate you joining us and sharing your lessons learned with us.
Well, I thank you so much for letting me be part of it and thinking of having me on today. Thank you for everything that you do for veterans, and thank you for doing this podcast. I hope that it helps folks take a look at the transition piece in a different light. So thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Lessons Learned for Vets. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help smooth your path during your transition from the military, then I have done my job. If you haven't already, please click subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. While you're at it, leave us a review and share our podcast with your friends. Connect with me on LinkedIn and join the Lessons Learned for Vets Facebook community to tell me what lesson you learned today. See you next time.